Shalom, welcome to ASJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai Pesach Ben Dov Meir Ben Yecheskel and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers this week, I want to speak about the disastrous, horrific announcement that was fully expected by JTFers, because JTFers know what's going on better than anyone else, because we've been right from the start on all of these issues. The announcement that Israel once again is going to enter into so-called negotiations with the PLO Fatah, Muslim Nazi terrorists. And in order to get the PLO Fatah, Muslim Nazi terrorists to the negotiating table, what did Israel have to do? First of all, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is worse than the left, he is worse than the left-wing prime ministers. He announced that he's going to continue a complete building freeze on all Jewish housing in Judea, Samaria, and eastern Jerusalem. Ever since he took office in 2009, there has been a building freeze on Jewish housing and on the building of Jewish communities in Judea, Samaria, and eastern Jerusalem. Tens of thousands of Jews every year would have been moving to Judea, Samaria, and eastern Jerusalem if not for Netanyahu's building freeze. Netanyahu has dried up Jewish communities. They're beginning to dry up because of him. There are still 300,000 Jews there, but now they're experiencing hardship because of his anti-Semitic policies of barring Jews from living in their own homeland. And so he's drying up Jewish communities. He's driving up housing prices so that people are unable to afford homes or apartments in Judea, Samaria, and eastern Jerusalem. So they're not moving there because they can't afford it, because there's a scarcity of housing because of his building freeze. And so he's keeping tens of thousands of Jews out. If he had not had this building freeze since 2009, instead of 300,000 Jews in Judea and Samaria, we probably would have had about 400,000. And it would have been much more difficult to create a PLO Fatah independent Muslim Nazi terrorist state. But because of his policies, he is bringing Israel to the point where the danger of the creation of such a state is very, very real. And he agreed to continue this building freeze. He calls it a quiet freeze because he's lying. He and his government deny that there's a building freeze, even though his own housing minister, Uri Ariel, has publicly stated that there is a building freeze and that there has been a building freeze. He has publicly stated this. But Netanyahu himself is lying and his government is lying. So in other words, without formally announcing a building freeze the way they did in 2009, in 2009 they did formally announce that there is a building freeze. And they got a lot of resistance from good Jews in Israel that are against such an insane move and such an anti-Semitic move to deny Jews the right to build in their own homeland just because they're Jewish, while Arab Muslims can build anywhere they wish. And so he announced a formal building freeze in 2009. That got a lot of resistance. Now what he's been doing is not announcing it. He pretends that there is no building freeze, but in fact, the same building freeze is in effect. And everyone in Israel, all the political parties and all the players in Israel go along and do nothing about it. Do nothing about it. We are the only ones who have not stopped condemning this and exposing this and speaking out about this for years now. We are the only ones who have been telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to the Jews of Israel. And so part of this return to so-called negotiations includes a pledge to continue this disastrous, evil, anti-Semitic building freeze only on Jewish building, on the building of Jewish housing in Israel's biblical heartland. And of course, the reason why this is so suicidal is because the more Jews you have, obviously, in Judea, Samaria, and eastern Jerusalem, the more difficult it is to eventually throw them out and to create an independent so-called Palestine state there. Of course, there are no Palestinians, there is no Palestine, but the traitor leaders of Israel have already promised the anti-Semitic leaders of the world that they are going to create a Palestine state in Israel's biblical heartland, that they're going to say that the biblical heartland of Israel doesn't belong to the Jewish people, that the Bible is wrong and the Quran is right, and the Muslims are going to get Israel's biblical heartland that God promised only to the Jewish people. Instead, this is going to go to the enemies of the Jewish people, the Muslims, and this will prove, supposedly, that the Quran is right and the Bible is wrong. You can't have a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, more horrific than this. So that's the first thing. He agreed to a continued Jewish building freeze. Netanyahu. The second thing he agreed to is to release more Arab Muslim Nazi terrorist mass murderers. Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists, when they're captured by Israel, are eventually released. They murder men, women, children, slaughter innocent people in the most brutal way imaginable. You can't even imagine what brutality they use against little babies and children and women. Horrific crimes. But they get released in a couple of years as gestures to the PLO Fatah terrorists and to Barack Hussein Obama, the Muslim anti-Semite in the White House. And Netanyahu is going to release more of them now. He's planning to release at least 82 more Muslim terrorist mass murderers from Israeli prisons. That's the second thing he's agreed to. So Jewish building freeze, continue Jewish building freeze, and the release of more Muslim Nazi terrorist mass murderers. Israel has already released many thousands of Muslim Nazi terrorist mass murderers over the years. This is consistent Israeli self-hating policy. And the third thing he agreed to is that the talks between Israel and the PLO Fatah Muslim terrorists in Ramallah, the talks would be based on Israel going to the pre-1967 suicide borders. The pre-1967 suicide borders, which is what Israel would return to if a so-called Palestine state was created, God forbid, the pre-1967 suicide borders are only 6 to 9 miles wide. Israel would be 6 to 9 miles wide. Israel would be outnumbered by the Muslim terrorist nations that surround her, 100 to 1. Imagine being outnumbered 100 to 1, having the whole world against you, and having traitors as your leaders, and then living in borders that are only 6 to 9 miles wide. You can't get something more suicidal than that. If that's not a prescription for another Holocaust, I don't know what is. But he's agreed to go back to base the negotiations on Israel retreating to the pre-1967 suicide borders in a pledge that Secretary of State John Kerry and the Obama administration made to the PLO Fatah terrorists. In other words, Netanyahu promised Obama and Kerry then in writing promised the PLO Fatah terrorists. That's how it's working. Netanyahu, in the meantime, lies to the people of Israel, tries to put them to sleep, and keep them apathetic and keep them indifferent, and says, no, I never agreed to that. No, not much. Of course he agreed to that. Every single Israeli media source has reported that there's no question he's agreed to it, that there's no question there's a letter from the Secretary of State, John Kerry, to the PLO Fatah terrorists promising them that Israel is going to do this, and that this is what the final results of the talks will be based upon, God forbid. So this is the danger that we're facing. Notice, everything we told you, everything we warned you about is coming true. Now, you know, sometimes I repeat myself. I repeat myself a lot sometimes when we do these AskJTF programs, when I do the opening, and sometimes on the videos. And the reason I repeat myself is because, you know, sometimes it bears repeating because people don't listen and don't get it the first time that we warn about something. Look at how everything we warned about is coming true. And we warned, as you know, our great JTFers know that we have warned over and over and over again that this is what's coming. How many times did we tell you that if Obama is reelected, if Barack Hussein Obama, the Muslim anti-Semite, is reelected, that he is going to obsessively pressure Israel to commit national suicide? How many times did we do videos warning about that? Now look at what's happened. Isn't what we have warned about coming true? The Jew hater John Kerry, whose father's name was originally Cohen, so he has that self-hating Judenrat Kapo Jewish anti-Semitic blood in him. The vicious Jew hater John Kerry went to the Middle East 8 times in the past 4 months. 8 times in the past 4 months to pressure Israel to agree to this suicidal negotiating process. This is at a time when the whole Middle East is blowing up. Iran is close to building nuclear bombs, God forbid, which would be an unbelievable catastrophe for the whole world. A devastating danger of a nuclear holocaust is coming very quickly with Iran. That John Kerry and the Obama administration do nothing about, except pressure Israel not to take military action. Egypt just had another revolution and another overthrow, and the military overthrew the government, and they're back and forth, and they're fighting in the streets, and there's chaos in Egypt, the nation of 82 million people. Syria has a civil war where over 100,000 Muslim Nazis have been killed by their fellow Muslim Nazis. So the whole Middle East is blowing up all around. And what is Obama and Kerry, what are they concentrating on? They're concentrating on getting Israel to commit national suicide. They're doing nothing about Iran or Egypt or Syria or any of these other issues. Of course, anything they would do in these areas would probably be harmful anyway, because Obama supports his Muslim brothers. But they're doing nothing about the whole Middle East blowing up. They're doing nothing about that, which obviously the whole situation is dangerous as far as the United States security interests are concerned. And they're doing nothing to protect the United States or American national security. Obviously, they're betraying Israel. And instead of dealing with all of these very, very serious crises, hot crises that are going on all over the Middle East, they're focusing all their attention on getting little Israel to vivisect herself and go back to suicidal borders that even Abba Ibn, who was a left-wing Labor Party socialist foreign minister, even he said that the pre-1967 borders are Auschwitz lines, Holocaust lines, suicide lines. Golda Meir, another socialist from the Labor Party, who was prime minister of Israel, said any Jew who would support returning to such lines would have to be a traitor. And this is what Obama and Kerry are demanding, and this is what Netanyahu is agreeing to. And all the politicians in Israel are all lying. The Jewish Home Party, Habayit HaYehudi, which claim, the head of that party, Naftali Bennett, said, we will not sit in the government for 1 second if the government enters into negotiations based on the pre-1967 borders. We will not sit in a government for 1 second that agrees to negotiations on that basis. Well, now Netanyahu has agreed to it, and they're still sitting in the government. Everything they say is a lie and a bluff. Everything is a lie and a bluff. And by the way, again, we warned you that there'd be a tremendous difference between Obama and Mitt Romney. Look at the difference on this issue. Just look at the difference. Mitt Romney said that his number one concern would be immediately stopping Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons through any means necessary, and he made it very clear that that means military action. I'm telling you that if Mitt Romney had been elected president, I believe the Iranian nuclear problem would have been solved by now. I think that the United States or Israel would have already militarily taken out and destroyed Iran's nuclear bomb-making program if Mitt Romney had been elected president. We would have this tremendous threat of a nuclear holocaust finally eliminated, at least for the next 5 or 10 years, if Mitt Romney had been elected president. On that issue alone, it was worth electing Romney president. And then if Mitt Romney were president, he was not going to obsessively pressure Israel. He made it clear that he didn't think getting Israel to surrender land and getting Israel to agree to these negotiations, he didn't think that this was something that would solve America's problems in the Middle East by any means. He made that clear in the campaign. Now, do I think Mitt Romney would have been a good president? I'm not convinced of that. Do I think that he also would have been pressuring Israel in certain areas? I'm sure he would. But it would have been more similar to what you had when Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush were president. There was pressure on Israel from time to time. They did bad things to Israel from time to time. But it was not obsessive, constant, 24-hour-a-day pressure on Israel to commit suicide with a knife at Israel's throat all the time. Under Obama, like under Jimmy Carter and like under Bill Clinton, under Democrat presidents, this is what has always happened. You have this constant obsessive pressure on Israel to commit suicide. This is what happened when Jimmy Carter was president. This is what happened when Bill and that piglet Hillary Clinton were in the White House. This is what has happened under Obama. Non-stop pressure on Israel to commit suicide. You did not have this during the 16 years when Ronald Reagan was president and George W. Bush was president. Reagan was president for 8 years, George W. Bush for another 8 years. So certainly for Israel, for the survival of Israel, which is the premier issue in the world today, if you read your Bible, this is the issue that will decide the future of the world more than any other. On this issue, you can bet your bottom dollar that Israel would be in much better shape and the world would be in much better shape if Mitt Romney had won. Would he have been what we really want? No. He's not Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee is a genuine friend and supporter of Israel because he's an evangelical Christian who believes in the Bible. Mike Huckabee would have been great. Romney would not have been as good, but he would have been light years better, much better, than Barack Hussein Obama, who is a catastrophe. This is why we worked so hard and did so many videos and tried so hard to convince people to oppose Obama. And, you know, unfortunately, he was reelected anyway, unfortunately. And so what we warned would happen is coming true. Everything we said, and you remember all the people saying, oh no, policy is already set, there's no difference between Obama and Romney, there's not really going to be. That is not true. There's a big difference between presidents like Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush and Mitt Romney, between politicians like that who are not obsessed with destroying Israel and politicians like Jimmy Carter and Bill and Hillary Clinton and Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry, who are obsessed with destroying Israel. For the survival of Israel, there's a tremendous difference between those politicians. A tremendous difference. And we warned that that was going to happen, and you see it playing out exactly as we said it would happen. Exactly on the same issues. Remember we said Iran would get, we'd have this danger of Iran finally creating nuclear bombs. We'd have the pressure on Israel not to strike Iran. We'd have the building freeze and the pressure on Israel to create a so-called Palestine state. Everything we said was going to happen is happening exactly the way we said it was going to happen. All the people who said we were wrong, who said, no, there's no real difference in policy, you're wrong, they have been proven wrong, and once again, we've been proven right. And the reason we're right and they're wrong is not because we're so brilliant and we're so analytical. No. It's because we're willing to face reality. And the other people who speak to you are not. The politicians and the leaders and the other people, they're not willing to tell you truth. They're not willing to tell you the truth. They're not interested in the truth. We are. And that's why what we have told you is coming true. And it's coming true for America too, by the way, with Obama. I mean, look at the horrific results in terms of so-called gay marriage, in terms of Obamacare, and just on every single issue, look at the horrific results. They're pushing for the amnesty bill, which already passed the Senate, and God forbid it may still pass the House. A lot of pressure is being put on House Republicans. So you see that all of these dangerous things that we warned you about for America, it's also coming true. It's also coming true. You know what all of this means? All of this means is JTF. You great JTFers out there already know this, but JTF is the organization that deserves your support. If you really want an organization that tells the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, and exposes the truth, if you want an organization that isn't silent, that always speaks out, if you want an organization that you know will do everything it can to protect and save America and Israel from this disaster, and to wake up the people of America and of Israel and of the Western world. If you want an organization that will do everything it can to achieve that, and that's what we have to be doing in this generation, the JTF is the organization that deserves your support, then you're in the right place. The latest developments prove once again that JTF is the address for those who want the truth and who want to wake people up and at least try the best we can. We don't always succeed. Obama was reelected. Now, there's a building freeze in Israel. We don't always succeed. But at least you know with us, we're going to try our best, we're going to tell the truth, we're going to do everything we can, and we're obligated. We're obligated to do that. We are not allowed to sit back in silence and inaction and watch these things. What, no matter what the odds are, we have an obligation. God requires us to speak out for truth and for justice and for righteousness. God requires us to issue the warnings. God requires us to do everything we can to wake people up. So at least we know that we did the right thing. And so, if you agree that we're not allowed to be silent, if you agree that there has to be one organization that tells the truth, if you agree that JTF has been right, then I urge you, once again, to help us. Get involved and help us. Promote the English and Hebrew videos when you see us upload English and Hebrew videos. Even the ones that are in Hebrew, even if you don't speak Hebrew, you can still help promote them on the search engines. Help us promote our English and Hebrew videos. You can do that on YouTube and on Facebook by liking, favoriting, commenting, mirroring, and sharing. Mirroring. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it well enough to be comprehensible, but to mirror and to share and to like and to favorite and to comment on those videos. That promotes the videos on Facebook and on YouTube. And the second thing we need people to do is our English and Hebrew forums, if you speak Hebrew, on the Hebrew forum too. But if not, at least on the English forum, we need interesting threads and posts. We need people to write things that will make our forums inviting places so that people want to become more involved with us and more active with us. We have people who visit us, as you can see from our statistics. You see on our front page, you can see the statistics. They're available to everybody. You see the official statistics. Thousands and thousands of people visit us all the time because of our videos. They, out of curiosity, they visit us. We have to make our forums places where people will want to visit. They'll want to get their information from us. They'll want to support us. They'll want to join with us. They'll want to work with us. They'll want to do things. Help us do that by making the forums and by making our Facebook pages inviting places, interesting places where people want to come and want to join and want to participate and want to be active. And finally, last but not least, you know that our number one problem has always been financial. That's been the number one problem for good activist Jews for 100 years now. I mean, that's why we had a Holocaust, because Ben Hecht and the good Jews that wanted to save the Jews during the Holocaust didn't have the resources necessary to have a big campaign to wake up the American people and wake up American Jews in order to force Roosevelt to take action to save the Jews during the Holocaust. They didn't have the millions of dollars they needed to do that, to have a big campaign like that. If they did, the results, we may not have had a Holocaust. And ever since then, we've had the same problem. A continuous problem where the good Jews and the righteous Jews don't have the resources they need, and this is JTF's problem. We're going to continue to fight with whatever we got. But you should know that, and you do know, that every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a difference. It really does. It helps us. It helps us reach more people. It helps us tell the truth. It helps us try to wake people up and try to change the situation as best we can. That's what we're obligated to do. And so we thank the wonderful JTFers who help us with checks and money orders and cash donations to our P.O. box. God bless you. And to the great JTFers who help online by going to our main pages and pressing the donate button online, supporting us online. Those who support us financially, God bless you. God bless your families in this world and in the next. Okay, so that's the critical challenge we're facing. Unfortunately, the things we warned about are all coming true. But those of us in JTF who've seen all of these things for years now are not surprised. Once again, thank you for those of you that are helping us. And please, let's all get involved and let's help more. And let's get involved even more. This is a critical time. Now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers. If I can get to it. Okay. All right, and we start with the great Pyramid Head fan. Dear Chaim, what are your thoughts on Buster Keaton? Was he ever a righteous person? Unquote. Buster Keaton was the actor who did films. He was in the silent movies, and later he did other films when we had talking pictures. I don't know that much about him. I do know that he did a film mocking biblical characters, mocking Samson, and I don't remember who else, but he mocked people. He did a film making fun of people in the Bible and mocking people in the Bible. That's something that I certainly don't think is a positive thing. Beyond that, I don't know very much about him. But, you know, when someone becomes famous, or when someone is wealthy, or when someone has the ability to help and do great things, they're obligated to do great things. Did he do something? Did he do something in his lifetime? In the years that he was in this world, when he had a lot of money and wealth and influence and was a famous actor and famous producer and very famous Hollywood figure, did he do anything to make this, to really make this a better world? I don't think so. Unless there's something I don't know about him. Anyway, thank you, Pyramid Head fan. And now we go to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, how come Jews don't believe in Jesus Christ? Isn't he supposed to be the king of the Jews? Unquote. The reason that they don't believe in Jesus, Joe Gutfeld, is because there are tremendous differences between Christianity and Judaism, and the Jewish view of the Messiah and the Jewish view of God and the Jewish view of the world is very different from the Christian view. The Jews believe in the absolute oneness of God. Christians believe in Trinity. And I don't want to get into a religious argument and discussion about the differences there, but there's a difference there. The Jews believe that the Messiah is going to be a human being, a great human being. He's going to be a great prophet and a great leader and a great king. And God is going to bless him and support him and give him tremendous power to do righteous things and to fight against evil. But he's going to be an ordinary human being born of an ordinary mother and father. Whereas the Christian view is that the Messiah, Jesus, was actually God. God himself became a man and became the Messiah. So the views between the differences between Judaism and Christianity on these issues are very great differences. But let me just say this. Jews and Christians must work together despite the theological differences. We have our theological differences. We can't pretend that we don't have our differences. But we must work together. Not only because we have common enemies, but because morally, we are obligated to fight for righteousness and goodness and to help good people against evil. And so we have to work together despite the fact that there are theological differences. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, thoughts on Achad Ha'am, unquote. Achad Ha'am was one of the original leaders of what they call secular Zionism. He wasn't even a nationalist. He believed that so-called Zionism, which means the creation of a Jewish state, should be based upon secularism. He did not believe in Judaism. He considered Judaism to be a culture. In other words, it's like a cultural phenomenon. He originally came from a Hasidic background, but he left Hasidut and he left Judaism and became secular. And said that Judaism and Zionism should be cultural. We should be a cultured people and have cultural, state and a cultural community. What a disastrous philosophy! Look at the results of it. Now we have Hebrew-speaking, self-hating people in Israel who don't know the first thing about Judaism, don't know the first thing about the Torah, don't feel any connection to the land of Israel, the people of Israel, because they were raised without any Jewish values. That's the result of what leaders like him brought, the secularism and the anti-religious views that leaders like him brought to the people of Israel and brainwashed young Jews in Israel, and the destructive effects are something that we're living with to this day. So I think he was a disaster. Gematria also writes, how about Kehilat Shira Chadasha? Unquote. Kehilat Shira Chadasha, they call themselves feminist Orthodox Jews. They're trying to introduce feminism into Orthodox Judaism. First of all, let me say that I believe in women's rights. And Judaism is extremely respectful of women and extremely supportive of women's, of true women's rights. True women's rights is respecting women and their dignity and their honor and their greatness. That's true women's rights. Feminism, on the other hand, is an evil philosophy that seeks to blur and eliminate the differences between men and women, and that is at war with males. Now, this group claims that they're not exactly like these other feminists, that they're actually Orthodox Jews who are feminists. Come on. Little by little, they're introducing this horrific philosophy into Orthodox Judaism. It is a negative thing. It's a bad thing. It's not the way to go. And now Gematria writes, what about the modern Orthodox movement, unquote? Well, it depends what you define by modern Orthodoxy. In Israel, the so-called modern Orthodox movement is dominated by supporters of Harav Avraham Cook. And there are a lot of pluses and minuses. Harav Avraham Cook, for instance, did believe that the Jews must return to Eretz Yisrael, must return to the land of Israel. He was against giving up any land. So in that respect, there are a lot of good things that he preached and that he proposed and that his followers are supposed to be following. On the other hand, they worship the Israeli government. They worship the army, they worship the institutions of Israel, they worship the Israeli government. They want a Jewish state so badly that they worship evil people that are undermining the Jewish state. That is very bad. Very, very bad. They supported David Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann and other traitors who collaborated with the British, who handed over Jewish freedom fighters, to the British to be hanged, who did terrible things to the Jewish people. So, you know, there are many negative aspects to what is referred to as the modern Orthodox movement. And the so-called modern Orthodox movement in the United States, it's really bad. Because you have groups like Yeshiva University, which is a horrific institution that produces animals like Alan Dershowitz, the attorney who said that he would have represented Hitler and gotten him off. That's the type of scum that Yeshiva University produces. Yeshiva University also produced, what's the name of that ambassador, the American ambassador to Egypt and to Israel, from Yeshiva University, who supports peace now and supports and is anti-Israel. I forgot his name, but another animal. I mean, so many self-hating Jewish animals from Yeshiva University. That is an evil institution. And that's a modern Orthodox institution. So there are many aspects of it that are very, very bad. They are an establishment group. There's a lot of corruption. And they're very connected to the establishment. They support the establishment. So, you know, I don't think that's the role for Torah Jews to be playing. I think Torah Jews should be challenging the establishment and replacing the establishment with good and righteous and idealistic Jews who love their people and love their homeland and love their faith and love their God. That's what I believe true Torah Jews should be doing. Thank you, Gematria. And now we go to our great friend waiting for the mother plane to come, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, the Park Street Sodomite bathhouse is the Park Street Mosque, i.e. the Schneier Shul. Is it worse than the 9/11 Nazi mosque, unquote? Okay, yes, it definitely is. Anything associated with Mark Schneier or Arthur Schneier, two self-hating Judenrat capo beasts who call themselves rabbis, quote-unquote. They're not rabbis. They're complete traitors to the Jewish people who support Barack Hussein Obama and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and David Dinkins and all the black Jew haters. They support all the Muslim Jew haters. They defend Islam. They tell people that the Quran is not really anti-Semitic, that the Quran is a book of peace and that Islam is a religion of peace. I mean, these are evil, evil people. They had JDL members arrested when we tried to protest in front of their so-called synagogue, which was right across the street from the Soviet mission on East 67th Street. They had us arrested. They called the police and had us arrested instead of supporting us and helping us protest to free our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union. These are the lowest of the low. These are Jews that would have shoved Jewish babies into ovens and gas chambers during the Holocaust to save their own necks and to show how respectable they are. That's the type of Judenrat capo filth that you get with Arthur and Mark Schneier. Yimach Shmam V'Zichram. They are worse than the 9/11 Nazi mosque. Thank you, Waiting for the Mother Plane. And now we go to our great friend Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, did Menachem Begin react wrong in the Altalena incident? If so, what should he have done instead? Unquote. I think he certainly did. 16 Jewish heroes were murdered in cold blood by David Ben-Gurion and Yitzhak Rabin on the Altalena. The Altalena was a ship from the Irgun Tzvayi Leumi, the Jewish freedom fighting underground organization that was bringing in weapons to help the Jews in their war of independence against the Arab Muslim Nazis in 1948. And Ben-Gurion and Rabin attacked the ship and murdered in cold blood 16 Jewish heroes on that ship, all of whom were Holocaust survivors. These were Jewish Holocaust survivors who lost their entire families in the Nazi concentration camps. And they were coming to Israel to fight for a Jewish state. And they're murdered by their fellow Jews because they weren't left-wing commies. Should they have fought back? Absolutely. They had the weapons on the ship and the ability to fight back, and they should have fought back. No one has a right. I don't want civil war, and I don't want Jews fighting Jews. But no one has a right to murder good Jews in cold blood. If someone fires at you and wants to murder you, you have a right to kill them instead, including so-called fellow Jews. If they fire at you and want to kill you and want to murder you, you have a right to kill them in self-defense. You have a right and even an obligation. And Menachem Begin should have done that in the Altalena. And if he had reacted differently to all the treason of Ben-Gurion and Rabin and all these other traitors, and if the Irgun people had reacted differently, the Jewish state would certainly have been a better place in the end. There would have been some very rough and bloody incidents, perhaps, here and there. But in the end, the Jewish state would have been a better place. Because Ben-Gurion and the traitors that eventually took over Israel and that still run Israel, that run all of the institutions in Israel, they would have had a real challenge, and they wouldn't have been able to just take over all the institutions and destroy the soul of the Jewish people, which is what they did in Israel. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to our great friend LKZ, who writes, and I quote, what happened in the Boston and Fort Hood missionary trials, unquote. LKZ, I'm not sure what you're referring to here. I know that there were terrorist attacks in Boston and in Fort Hood, but I don't know what you mean by missionary trials. I don't understand what that means. So you'll have to explain yourself, because I'm not sure if you're referring to the terrorist attacks and the terrorist trials. If you're referring to the terrorist trials, I think what's happening in Boston and in Fort Hood are a travesty. But I'm not sure, because you're putting the word missionary in there, so I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to. If you can clarify it, I'll be happy to answer your question, LKZ. And now we go to our great friend Papercut, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, please talk about the third Boston bomber, Saudi national, and Obama's involvement with him, unquote. Yeah, this is a really, really horrific example of Obama's treason. In the Boston bombing case, we know that two Muslim terrorists were arrested. But the two Chechenian Muslim terrorists were arrested. But there was a third person arrested, a third Muslim terrorist. He was a Saudi national. And he was actually taken into custody and arrested. And Glenn Beck, by the way, has been exposing this. I think Glenn Beck has done great work on this subject. And I agree with Glenn Beck that all the evidence points to the fact that this is another massive cover-up. There was a Saudi national arrested as the third Muslim terrorist in Boston. He was actually injured in the bombing also. He was actually hospitalized and injured. It wasn't a major injury, but he was actually hospitalized as a result of the bombing. And he was arrested because, the Saudi had a long history of involvement with terrorism. He was flagged on the terrorist watch list, on the State Department and Justice Department terrorist watch list. Even before he came to the U.S., he was flagged as a terrorist, as having long been involved with terrorist organizations. But he was admitted to the U.S., into the U.S. anyway, on a student visa. Even though he was a terrorist, even though he was flagged on a terrorist watch list, because he was a Saudi, connected to the Saudi government, They admitted him into the U.S. on a student visa. He was supposed to be going to school in Findlay, Ohio, but he never went there. He had an apartment in Boston and just so happened to be there when the bomb went off, just so happened to be around when all of this was going on, just so happened to be one of the people injured in the bombing, because, you know, sometimes the terrorists themselves get injured doing their own work. That's one of the hazards of the business. And they had enough evidence against him to actually put him in custody, and they were going to charge him. But all of a sudden, the Saudi regime, Saudi foreign minister and Saudi and people from the Saudi regime met with Obama and met with Vice President Joe Biden demanding his release, and he was released. And all of a sudden, we don't hear about him anymore. We just don't hear about him anymore. It reminds me of what happened on 9/11. You know, they talk about conspiracy theories with 9/11. Well, the conspiracy theorists on 9/11 are insane. Insane. And it is an atrocious act of treason to say that the Muslim terrorists did not murder 3,000 Americans on 9/11. I mean, that's absurd. There's no question the Saudi terrorists and the Egyptian terrorists did crash those planes into those buildings and were responsible for the murder of 3,000 Americans. That's for sure. But the conspiracy people, they cover up the real conspiracy. You know what the real conspiracy is? This was financed by the Saudi regime, the Saudi ambassador's wife. And this is something you can look up that no one denies. The Saudi's ambassador's wife gave money to the terrorists who attacked on 9/11. She gave them money to the hijackers who crashed the planes into the buildings. They got their money from the Saudi ambassador's wife. That's the real conspiracy on 9/11. And the Bush administration covered that up. So anytime the Saudis are involved in something notorious, in murder, in terrorism, which they're involved with all the time, it's automatically covered up. And that's something that should be exposed. There's no question about that. Thank you, Paper Cut. And now we go to our friend Chicago Jew, our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "I had no idea there were so many self-hating white Uncle Toms that were against the correct verdict. See you in 1 month," unquote. Absolutely. Well, Chicago Jew, we know that Obama was reelected. He got a lot of white votes. He didn't get the majority of the white vote. The majority of whites did vote for Romney. They voted against him. But he got enough white votes together with blacks and other and Muslims and others. That was enough to get him into the White House. So we know that there are a lot of self-hating whites. There's no question about that. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Queen Elizabeth II approved fag marriage," quote unquote, in England. What will God do to England now? Edward I expelled the Jews and his son was homo and deposed, unquote. Well, you know, England has so many sins on its hands. You know what they did during, you say they expelled the Jews. Look what they did during the Holocaust. They closed the doors to the land of Israel to millions of Jews who wanted to escape Hitler's inferno. I mean, millions of Jews could have escaped, could have been saved. The British closed the doors to the land of Israel. They fired on and sunk shiploads of Jewish refugees and murdered hundreds of Jewish refugees who were trying to get into Israel. They kept them out and sent other shiploads back to Hitler's Germany to be burned and gassed. So England is very much responsible for the Holocaust, just as Germany is. And with that terrible history, they're doing everything now to destroy Israel. The government, the regime there, completely supports pressuring Israel and getting Israel to commit suicide. That's British policy. It's the British policy of the whole European Union. And so they have a lot, they have a lot to answer for. And now the fact that they are supporting homosexual marriage, another horrific crime. God does not tolerate this. God has destroyed entire civilizations. Entire civilizations have been wiped off the face of the earth when they've accepted this. The first famous example we have, of course, in the Bible is Sodom and Gomorrah. But there are many other examples. when the Greeks, the Romans, and others accepted this, their civilizations were eliminated. And by the way, you could say, well, Greece still exists. The ancient Greek culture does not exist. It's gone. Ancient Roman culture does not exist. It's gone. Modern Italy there's no comparison between modern Italy and ancient Rome. There's no comparison between modern Greece and ancient Greece. Or between modern Persia between modern Iran and ancient Persia. And so on. Entire civilizations were wiped out completely. And in many cases, it was because they accepted homosexuality. It's something God does not tolerate. He warns about it, and he doesn't tolerate it. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "What is appropriate sexual behavior for single Jewish women and men who are not dating? Is fooling around without sex permissible before marriage?" Unquote. No, it isn't permissible, and Judaism does not permit it, because fooling around leads to fornication. Fornication is premarital sex. Jewish men and women who like each other and who feel compatible should get married. Then they don't have to just fool around. Then they could love each other the way they should love each other and have families. That's what they should do. They should get married. The answer is not to fool around and not to have premarital sex, but to get married. That's the truly fulfilling and positive thing to do. And believe me, as someone who at the age of 56 is not married, believe me, the worst thing you can do is let time pass by and not get married. The best thing is Jewish men and women who meet each other in a situation like this. They should see if they're compatible. They should think about it first. It's a serious decision that has to be made. And then go for it. Get married. That's what they should be doing. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to Hayamin Sadak, who writes, and I quote, "What can be done to force the unity and equality between secular religious and Haredi Jews in Israel? Can Haredim be encouraged to be Zionist?" Unquote. The best way to foster unity is, among all Jews, is to get Jews to do what Hashem commands them to do in the Torah. To settle the land of Israel, to believe in the Torah and follow the mitzvot of the Torah, and to return to Hashem, to return to God. Truly return to God and truly be loyal to the land of Israel, the people of Israel, the Torah of Israel. That will bring true unity. That will bring the most beautiful world to the people of Israel and for the whole world. Because the redemption of the Jews will lead to the redemption of the righteous Gentiles all over the world as well. And so that's the answer. That is the only way to have true unity. We can turn Eretz Yisrael into Gan Eden, into the Garden of Eden, if only we do what Hashem has laid out for us to do. Hashem has given us the blueprint. If we just try what He has told us to do, but really try it seriously, and not just have movements that do one thing, like keep Shabbat, but then don't settle at Eretz Yisrael. Do both of them. Let's keep Shabbat and be kosher, and let's follow the commandments, and at the same time, let's settle the entire land of Israel and get rid of the Arab Muslim Nazi enemy and do what a chosen people and a holy nation and a nation of priests are supposed to do. If we do that, Eretz Yisrael will be Gan Eden, will be like the Garden of Eden. Thank you, Hayamin Sadak. And now we go to the great Obama is trash, who writes, and I quote, "Spanish actor Antonio Banderas held a fundraiser for BHO, for Barack Hussein Obama. British singer Sting said Barack Hussein Obama sent from God. Why do they support BHO if they're not Americans?" Unquote. Because they're leftists. And they like seeing this vicious black Muslim piece of garbage in the White House. They like this. And, you know, Obama is very popular among anti-American leftists all over the world. Very popular. They love him. When he went to Germany and all these other countries, all these socialist countries in Europe, you remember the huge rallies they held for him, how they loved him, how he got gigantic crowds. They love him. They love him. And one of the reasons they love him is because they resent America and can't stand America. Thank you, Obama's trash. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, certain people claim the problem in the Trayvon Martin shooting was Zimmerman, who shouldn't have followed Trayvon after his 9/11 call. Your response, unquote? My response is that every citizen, every law-abiding citizen like George Zimmerman, has the right to follow someone who is suspicious, who's coming into a gated community, a community with gates, a strange person coming in, wearing a hood, trespassing on people's private property, which is what Trayvon Martin was doing, and peeking in people's homes and looking very suspicious. Like he was casing the places. George Zimmerman had a right, after all the robberies that took place and all the burglaries and all the break-ins that took place in this community, all, by the way, done by young black men like Trayvon Martin. After this experience, he had a right to observe and watch what Trayvon Martin was doing. He had a right to do that, and even an obligation. I think that his observing Trayvon Martin is something that everybody should do. You should observe, and you should be on the lookout when suspicious people come into your community. And so I think his actions were actually praiseworthy. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to our friend Mohammed says, smell my left hand, who writes, and I quote, there's a gun to your head. Your attacker will shoot if you don't either, one, kiss Suha Arafat, or two, smell Mohammed's left hand. Which do you do? Unquote. I would hope that I'd be strong enough not to do either one. You know, when someone holds a gun to your head and your life is in danger, you never know how you're going to react unless you're in that situation. Until you're there, until you're in that situation, you don't know how you're going to react. But I would hope that I would say, no, I refuse to do either one of them. I refuse. If someone's going to shoot me, they'll shoot me, but I'm not going to do it. I would hope that I'd be strong enough to do that. I don't know, because until you're in a situation like that where your life is in danger, you don't know until you're actually in that predicament. Thank you, Mohammed says. And now we go to our great friend Confederate Kahanis, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, what is your opinion of the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints polygamist movement? Thanks and God bless, unquote. I think in our modern society in the United States, we should not have polygamous movements. I do believe in the Bible. I do believe that there are times when polygamy is acceptable. It's not something, by the way, that was encouraged, even in biblical times. It was not encouraged, except for kings and for certain leaders. But most of the Jews in ancient times did not have more than one wife. Most of them only had one wife. We read about famous, wealthy, important leaders having more than one wife because that's what we read about in the Bible. We don't read usually about simple, average people. But polygamy actually was not encouraged in the Bible, but it was permitted. And I think in cases like a king or prophets or certain leaders, it should be permitted in certain cases. But to have that type of movement in the United States, when it's against the law now and there are understandable reasons for that, I don't think that would be appropriate. I don't think that's helpful. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to our good friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why does Germany always emerge as a powerful country in Europe, unquote? First of all, because Germany has the second biggest population in Europe, after Russia. And Germany is in the middle of Europe. It's in Central Europe. And Germany also has a very well-educated population. So, of course, they're going to emerge as a very powerful country. Because of their education and because of their discipline and because they have a large population and because of where they're situated, it's predictable that they will be a major player in Europe and in the world. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great Mishmad, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, the anti-white, anti-Semitic blacks are irate and agitated, and I love it. What was your reaction to Obama's recent speech on race, unquote? Well, you know, that's that filthy, anti-white, anti-Semitic hypocrite Obama talking about race. The fact is, there is a tremendous problem of racism in America. Except it's not what Obama's speaking about. The problem with racism and anti-Semitism is black racism and black anti-Semitism. Most blacks hate whites, hate Jews, are filled with jealousy and hatred. Irrational, evil jealousy and hatred. The vast majority of blacks are in that category. That is what should be addressed. That is what should be condemned. Instead, Obama and the news media and even the apologetic whites are always talking about white racism against blacks, which in most cases is a myth. Most white people are not racists. Most white people really aren't racist, because racist means that you hate a whole category of people because of the color of their skin. And most white people have proven that's just isn't true. But most blacks are racists. I'd like to see what would happen if a white guy goes marching through a black neighborhood, goes marching through Harlem or Bedford-Stuyvesant or Detroit or one of the Newark in one of these black areas, or D.C. in a black area, going on private property, peeking in people's homes and doing the things Trayvon Martin was doing. Do you think he'll get out alive, a white guy? You think the blacks will say, oh yeah, you have a right to go anywhere you want and do what you want, that's your right? I think it's obvious what the answer is. Blacks can go anywhere they want in America. Now they're allowed to go in any neighborhood, they go everywhere they want, and everybody kisses their behind. White people are actually not allowed to go to many communities and neighborhoods in this country because of the color of their skin. Blacks will kill them if they go into certain areas. You don't see Obama addressing that issue. And you wouldn't, because Obama's a racist himself. Obama's a racist and an anti-Semite. Thank you, Mishmat. And now we go to our good old friend, Christians for Jews, who writes, and I quote, Al Sharpton seems more interested in Zimmerman case than the 7,000 black-on-black murders this year and the 700 black-on-black murders in Chicago. Why? Unquote. Because Al Sharpton is only interested in preaching anti-white and anti-Semitic hatred. That's the only thing he cares about. He's a hater. He's a jealous, ugly, filthy, inferior piece of garbage. A low-life piece of subhuman trash. And he despises whites in general and Jews in particular. He doesn't care about thousands of his fellow blacks being slaughtered every year by other blacks. If he cared about black lives, if he really cared about that, that would be the big issue. A true self-respecting black would be more offended by other blacks killing blacks than by whites killing blacks. Just like I, as a Jew, as a self-respecting Jew, you see all the time when I see a self-hating Jew do something to his people, that enrages me much more than if a Gentile anti-Semite does something. I mean, I don't like anti-Semites at all in any group, but when a Jewish anti-Semite does something, I'm much more outraged. When someone from my own people betrays my own people and does something bad, I'm much more outraged than if someone from the outside of the community does something bad. And a true self-hating black would feel the same way. They would say, our own brothers are doing this to us? Our own brothers are acting like this to our fellow blacks? That should outrage them much more than the very rare cases of whites killing blacks, and very rare when whites kill blacks. Much more common when blacks murder innocent whites, much more common. But Al Sharpton is not interested in any of that. He's only interested in hatred and envy. And that's what the black leaders in this country are interested in. That's what Obama's interested in. And that's why you have this horrific phenomenon. Thank you, Christians for Jews. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, in the race for mayor of New York, is there anyone worth supporting, unquote? No, there really isn't. They're all terrible. They're all terrible. I'm going to be probably supporting Joe LaHorta. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but Joe LaHorta was the head of the MTA. He's running in the Republican primary. He's supported by Rudy Giuliani. But even he supports gay marriage. He's pro-abortion. Now, even he is a bad guy on many issues. But he would be like Giuliani. I think he would be much better than the other people running. The other people running are really bad. But I'm going to support Joe LaHorta. I don't think he has much of a chance of winning. I think he has very little chance of winning in New York City. New York City voted 81% for Obama. It's an insane city. Giuliani was elected in the past, but that was a different New York. That was a New York of 20 years ago. New York has changed demographically and changed in every the way America has changed in the past 20 years. New York has also changed for the worse. And so, you know, I don't think the Republican candidate's going to have much of a chance of winning, but that's who I'm going to support. Now, in the Democratic primary, the worst candidate is Anthony Weiner. Nothing is worse than a self-hating Judenrat capo Jew who is married to a Muslim from the Muslim Brotherhood. That is the worst. That will be the biggest curse on the city of New York and on America if that low-life, self-hating cockroach is elected mayor. That's the worst. Having a self-hating Jew who's married to a Muslim, if he's elected, that will be the worst curse imaginable. I think the second worst candidate probably is Christine Quinn, who is an admitted lesbian, and she says she's married to another woman. I mean, that'll also be a curse on New York City. And the only one in that primary who can possibly defeat either Anthony Weiner or Christine Quinn, the only one who has a chance of getting into the runoff, there's a runoff in New York primaries. If someone doesn't get at least 40% of the vote, the top two candidates then run against each other in a runoff 2 weeks later. The only other candidate who has a chance of coming in first or second place to get into the runoff would be Bill Thompson, who is a black Dinkins-type creature. If I were a Democrat, I would probably vote for Bill Thompson just to defeat Anthony Weiner and Christine Quinn. I do not support Bill Thompson. I despise Bill Thompson. But I'd vote for him to defeat Anthony Weiner or Christine Quinn in the Democrat primary because they're the worst. Those are the two worst ones. I'd probably vote for Bill Thompson. And then in November, I would support Joe LaHorta, the Republican candidate, who I hope will be the I hope he wins the Republican primary. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. I know that's it's a mess. It's a terrible situation there, but that's crazy New York City. I want to thank everybody on our program for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, shalom.